106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
More Than Miyagi is a 2021 documentary. It's directed by Kevin Derrick and is about the life of Pat Morita, who you may know better as Mr. Miyagi from the original Karate Kid films. Karate Kid is one of my favorite movies of all time. I wasn't born in the 80s. I didn't live through the 80s at all. But for whatever reason, it gives me nostalgia. It's one of those classic Hollywood movies. And the thing I really like about it is that it's one of the first kinds of movies from that time that depicts somebody who's badass as, you know, wise and not like super muscular like Sylvester Stallone or who are some other people like John Wayne, people like that. Doesn't necessarily show them, well, it doesn't show Mr. Miyagi as the super buff, super macho, fucking, action hero kind of guy. While he's still a badass, he's mindful and smart and wise. Just everything that a hero really should be, other than just being someone with brute force. He really did feel like a kind of grandfather in a way. And for that reason, I kind of connect that role with my grandpa a little bit. Not necessarily like he was exactly like him, but just having that wise, older, you know, mindful character really reminded me of my grandpa. Another thing that kind of reminds me of my grandpa is Pat Morita himself. You know, my grandpa was a really funny guy. He didn't deal with alcoholism like Pat Morita did, but, you know, he had a lot of, not a lot, but like quite a few traits that he shares with Pat Morita. So I saw a lot of my grandpa in this documentary, kind of. So, the thing I really liked about it is that it really highlighted the good and the bad of his life. He had a really rough childhood. He was, I can't remember what exactly, like, where exactly he was born. I'm pretty sure Japan, but I don't think he was there for very long because of the attack on Pearl Harbor. Obviously, they dropped the bombs in Japan, and so he had to move to the United States and basically live in the American version of a concentration camp. While they weren't being pushed into a gas chamber and killed, you know, a lot of them did die there because of malnutrition, whatever diseases they had, they couldn't cure it. There were suicides, all kinds of death and just despair. And Pat Morita, I believe he had tuberculosis when at the age of 2 and was told he would never walk again and would probably die pretty young. But he had this surgery that let him walk again and become stronger. So I think he was disabled from the age of 2 to maybe like 10. Not long after that, at the age of 12, he started drinking and didn't stop until the day he died. Alcoholism is one of the most destructive diseases out there. And that's really highlighted in this documentary as well. But overall, I think the thing I really took from this movie more than anything was just the idea that he was such a loving and caring and hilarious person, you know, touched the hearts of everybody he worked with, all of his family. People really looked up to him and thought of him as family. A lot of them, like, you know, the Karate Kid cast kind of considered him an uncle. I think they call them Uncle Pat. And, yeah, just the effect that he had on the people he surrounded himself with is what I took from the movie more than, you know, the terrible things that happened in his life. And I think that's what he would have wanted as well, is for everybody to see the good side of him and not the demons lurking inside. But overall, I would say I really enjoyed this documentary. I don't typically rewatch documentaries. Typically don't rewatch documentaries. So I probably wouldn't end up rewatching this, but I would highly recommend it. I would probably give it a 9.5 out of 10. Yeah, I think it at points focused a little too heavily on the Karate Kid. But I also understand why, because that's his most iconic role, is Mr. Miyagi. I mean, the movie's called More Than Miyagi, for fuck's sake. But, yeah, I would definitely recommend you guys go check it out. I think you can watch it on Amazon Prime Video, if I'm not mistaken. You may have to rent it, but it's basically anywhere VOD is available. It's in select theaters. I would definitely recommend it if you are a fan of Karate Kid and don't really know a whole lot about him, or if you do know a lot about him. Either way, if you appreciate what he has done, you'll appreciate this documentary. And even if you don't really know who he is, you might even still get quite a bit out of this. But it would help to at least watch the first Karate Kid to know what this guy's about, at least in his acting. But I really love the stand-up aspect. I never knew that he was a stand-up comedian. I knew he was a funny guy, but I never knew that he had a stand-up background, and he was hilarious. Had a lot of clips of him on stage that really just made me laugh. He was a really funny guy. But, yeah, he was also on Happy Days, which I had no idea he was on that. And just kind of showed some of his acting gigs up until The Karate Kid and the ones after. But overall, yeah, 9.5 out of 10. I really enjoyed this documentary. They did a great job with it, just showing all the aspects of his life, not leaving anything out, and giving every part of his life its opportunity to really shine on screen, and just giving each element of his life, you know, a proper length of time that it deserves, because there's a lot to go over with him, and they don't drag on a whole lot with a lot of it, and they also don't, you know, skimp on a lot of the details and stuff like that. They find the perfect balance of having each segment be the perfect length of time to be able to tell the story about that segment. So I would definitely recommend you go check out More Than Miyagi, learn about Pat Morita and his life and the people that he surrounded himself with. A lot of people came in, like Ralph Macchio, William Zabka, Martin Cove, James Hong, Simon Rex, Henry Winkler, just so many people that came in to talk about this man, even Tommy Chong. Yeah, I again would really recommend you guys watch this if you're into documentaries, and even if you're not, maybe check it out. I always enjoy documentaries. I'm a history buff, so anything having to do with that kind of stuff, I am usually interested in. So yeah, there's my review for More Than Miyagi. All right, The Sparks Brothers is a 2021 documentary that is directed by Edgar Wright and tells the story of Ron and Russell Mail. Also known as Sparks, also known as the Sparks Brothers. And you have a bunch of celebrities coming in and talking about them, like Beck. You also have Mike Myers, Fred Armisen. You even have fucking DJ Lance Rock from Yo Gabba Gabba, Weird Al, Nick Rhodes, Steve Jones, John Taylor, Flea, Jason Schwartzman. Love Jason Schwartzman. Yeah, all sorts of people coming in and giving their perspective on this legendary band that not a whole lot of people have really heard of, I feel like. I had no fucking clue who they were up until this documentary. Like, I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, I like the humor of this trailer, that the vibe it's giving off. I really want to watch this movie. Didn't do any research on them going, or, like, before I went in to the film. And I'm kind of happy that I did that, just so I could learn firsthand about these guys. And, oh my god, they were such an innovative band, just, like, such geniuses, fucking ahead of their time in more ways than one. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to really put them into a category, but, a lot of bands are, like, inspired by them, like Duran Duran and shit like that, I think, without even really knowing that they were inspired by them. Yeah, like, some people just heard them and they're like, who the fuck is this? And didn't find out for years. You know, it's just really amazing to learn about this kind of thing. For me, at least, I really love documentaries. I would probably watch this documentary again, to be honest. I really don't want to give away a whole lot because I really want people to go check this out, learn who Sparks are. I know that I'm going to be listening to a lot of their music over the next few days or so, just to, like, you know, associate, or not associate, but to educate myself on who these guys are and their music, because there's a lot of music in this movie that I really enjoyed. And to be honest, like, Edgar Wright obviously is a fan of them, because why would he be directing a movie about them if he wasn't a fan? And I see a lot of inspiration through Edgar Wright's films, like Baby Driver and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I see where he gets some of his inspiration from. He does get it from the Sparks Brothers, which is, you know, so beautiful just to see where a critically acclaimed director, one of my favorite directors, kind of got some of his inspiration from. Like, Baby Driver, for sure, you know, I would say for sure that he got inspiration from the Sparks Brothers, at least a bit, just because that movie, the way the music integrates with its surroundings and how it kind of tells a story in a way, just really blows my mind with that movie every time I watch it. Love that film. Also really love Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and a lot of the kooky and weirdness and just a lot of the animation and effects can kind of be attributed to the way that the Sparks Brothers just really were so creative in the way that they made their music videos, the way their stage presence was. I fucking loved this documentary for sure. And I already want to watch it again just because I'm so fascinated by these two people, Ron Mail and Russell Mail. They are such creative powerhouses, such oddities. A lot of people just assumed they weren't from this planet. A lot of people thought they were a British band. They were actually American, but they primarily were more popular in London and Europe and all that. Really didn't get enough traction in the U.S. From what this documentary said, which is such a shame, but I also kind of get it. Because even up until, like, the early 2000s, they were still making music that sounded like it could be, like, 70s and 80s. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just, like, it's hard to stay relevant when your music feels older, but you're playing it in modern time. You know, they were ahead of the curve when it came to synth music. Like pre-80s is when they started doing that, and pretty much had a whole synth album. And yeah, that's when that synth, like, synth, I can't say it, synthesizer music really didn't become popular until the 80s, and they were really the pioneers of that. And it just makes me see that a lot of, well, not a whole lot, but like quite a bit of 80s synth music can pretty much be traced back to them, whether or not they, the people that made it were thinking of them when they were making it or even knew who they were. But the idea of just like, I don't know, just the idea of being the pioneers of that subgenre of music. And they're always changing their image. They're rarely ever doing the same thing that they do on each album. Like, they have 25 albums, studio albums, which is pretty fucking crazy. And they're still performing. And they're I don't want to say old, but, you know, they're getting up there in age for sure. And they're still performing, still, you know, being how creative they are and just how wacky and such oddities on stage and off stage, just their presence alone. Just, for me, I love Ron Mayall, even more than, Russell. Something about Ron Mayall, just the way he doesn't blink and plays piano and just like stares. I don't know, something about that I just fucking love. And he had like the Hitler mustache for a long time. A lot of people were like, why is this guy dressed as Hitler? Or why is this guy dressed as Charlie Chaplin and shit like that? And he kept that style for a long time. But yeah, I really want to go see these guys live now just because their presence on stage is just unlike anything I've ever seen. Like, literally, I can't compare it to anything else. You can't compare Sparks to anything else because Sparks are Sparks. And this movie, this documentary just shows that more than anything. It's a pretty lengthy film. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. But I mean, there were some times where I was like, I feel like they could have been a little bit shorter, but at the same time, I wanted it to be longer. Like, I just wanted to like immerse myself into what their world looked like. And, just hearing from a bunch of fans and other celebrities that were aware of them at the time, just hearing their experiences with it and the music and the people, just seriously, people, go watch this film. It's so, so, so good. If you don't like documentaries, that's fine. Stop your bitching and go watch it. I don't know. If you don't like documentaries, you probably won't like it that much, but I don't know, man. Like, this is one of the best documentaries I have seen. Yeah, last film I talked about in this episode was More Than Miyagi. I really enjoyed that documentary. But this one is just so creative. The way that Edgar Wright directed this film is unlike any documentary I've ever watched. Like, it's a film. Like, it's not just a documentary. It's an experience. It's a film. It's a movie. And it has such a great story that you can't replicate because it is the story of Sparks. It sounds like I'm just kind of being a documentary nerd, and I kind of am, but I usually don't like documentaries about like musicians and shit like that. Completely opposite when it comes to this one. I loved it so much. I already want to watch it again. I want to go and listen to all of their music. And I really highly, highly, highly recommend you guys go check this out. I don't think I'd give it a 10 out of 10. I'd give it a 9.5. But still, that's fucking close to 10 out of 10. Again, it felt like it really slowed down at certain times. And it had a purpose to slow down. But at the same time, it was not difficult, but it was a bit of a drag. I don't know if that's the right word, but it dragged on just a little bit, I feel like. a little bit towards the end, just the way they wrapped it up. But overall, yes, love this documentary. Definitely want to watch it again. Highly recommend it. Again, I give it a 9.5 out of 10. It's directed by Edgar Wright, who is a fucking brilliant director. Love anything I've seen him do. So yeah, there's my review for 2021's The Sparks Brothers. All right, The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard is the sequel to 2017's The Hitman's Bodyguard. It's directed by Patrick Hughes, and screenplay is by Tom O'Connor, Brandon Murphy, and Philip Murphy. And, yeah, the director of the film also directed the first one, and Tom O'Connor also wrote the story for the first one as well. And it stars Ryan Reynolds as Michael Bryce, Samuel L. Jackson as Darius Kincaid, Salma Hayek as Sonia Kincaid, and Antonio Banderas as Aristotle Papadopoulos. Crazy fucking name there. Some other cast members you got in there. You have Tom Hopper playing Magnuson. You might know him from the Umbrella Academy. Sorry, I forgot about that for a minute. Gabriella Wright as Veronica. Christopher Kamiyasu as Zentu. Frank Grillo as Bobby O'Neill. Carolyn Goodall as Crowley. Alice McMillan as Also? I think it's Also. And you also have a cameo from Morgan Freeman himself. So, yeah. What can I say about this film? I did not like the first one very much when it first came out. I did see it in the theaters and tried rewatching it so I could review it for the podcast because I haven't reviewed it on here. But started watching it and I was just like, not really feeling it. Something about that movie I just never really liked that much. It has nothing to do with Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson, because I think they're hilarious together. But I don't know, maybe it was just the story more. Like, it was kind of this dark slash serious story and just didn't seem to fit well with the comedy. But with this one, it definitely does a little bit more for me. I love Sonya Kincaid. She is hilarious. And the way she treated Michael Bryce in this movie just had me laughing so much. Like, I found myself laughing at this movie a lot more than I did at the first one. It was violent. It was gritty. It was fucking hilarious and dirty. Samuel L. Jackson was pretty funny in it, too. I don't know. Overall, I just really did like this one better than the first one. Not by a whole lot. But, yeah, let me give you a short synopsis here. The bodyguard Michael Bryce continues his friendship with assassin Darius Kincaid as they try to save Darius's wife, Sonia. Yeah. So, that's pretty much the plot there. It's pretty simple. You have Antonio Banderas as the villain, and he has, like, some sort of hacking device or something made out of diamonds or some shit. And it, like, causes a lot of destruction to a lot of technology and just, like, cars and shit like that. Yeah, Devil Toasted had a review of this and kind of said that, like, these movies are a bit like, the James Bond movies, but, like, they're screenplays that they just, like, threw away. And they took them out of a wastebasket and were just like, hey, let's make a movie out of this. Frank Grillo had little to nothing to do in this film, which is kind of sucky because he's a great actor. Tom Hopper was pretty fun, as well as Christopher Kamiyasu. Gabriella Wright was fine, but didn't have a whole lot to do in the end. And Morgan Freeman's character, I liked him at first, and then all that just went away pretty much by the end of the movie. I won't say why, and I won't say what his character is and how he's connected to the other characters, but yeah, it's not what you think. So yeah, I love the trio of Michael Bryce, Darius Kincaid, and Sonia Kincaid. I think they're hilarious and the best parts in the movie. Ryan Reynolds was a lot less Deadpool in this film. He still had his badass moments, but after the events of the first film, he's on sabbatical, basically, and so it makes him a little bit more of a wimp. But at the same time, like, he still shows that he's a badass, which I love. Doesn't make him, like, completely a fucking wimp and just weak, which I was worried about going into it just from the trailers. But, yeah, Darius Kincaid was pretty funny. Overall, the real standout for me was Sonya Kincaid, played by Salma Hayek. I thought she was great. Again, this is not a great movie. I probably wouldn't watch this again, but I'm more likely to watch this one than the other one. I'd probably give it like a solid 6, and maybe like a 6.5 out of 10. Didn't blow me away, but I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. So that's good at least. But yeah, if you haven't seen the first one, I don't know. Part of me is just like, don't worry about it. But if you want to watch these movies, then maybe you'll want to watch the first one. And you'll probably want to watch the first one just for context. But yeah, I mean, not the greatest movies, but this one was definitely better than the first one. At least for me. So don't know if other people watching it feel the same, but that's just kind of how I felt in this one. They embraced more of the silliness of it. Especially with the villain, they didn't try to, like, make this super gritty, dark, fucking evil villain. They just made, like, kind of a, I mean, Antonio Banderas in this movie was evil, but not, like, fucking killing, this is kind of a spoiler for the first one, but the villain in there, played by Gary Oldman, he was Vladislav Dukovic. He literally fucking killed a wife and child in front of a dude. And, man, that was such a fucking dark thing and so depressing and shit to put in the beginning and then have all these, like, fucking, all this fucking goofy shit after the fact. Yeah, I didn't really like the first one a whole lot. This one had a lot more fun with it and didn't try to take it too seriously, which I think helped it in the end. But I'm going to stop rambling on. I don't have a whole lot else to say about this movie, really, other than I had some fun with it and didn't think it was bad at all. Definitely better than the first. But yeah, there's my review for 2021's The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. All right, 2021's Luca. This is a new Disney Pixar film, and if you have a Disney Plus subscription, it comes at no extra charge, so you don't have to pay that stupid premium tier thing where you gotta pay like $30 to just rent a movie. That's what's gonna be happening with Black Widow. However, that'll be available in theaters too. Luca will not be, unfortunately. But yeah, I have to say, this is a lot more simple of a story than a lot of the other Pixar films are. A lot of the Pixar films seem to have, you know, grandiose stories and just, you know, above and beyond. But with this, it has a pretty simple plot with a really interesting and unique concept where you have Luca, played by Jacob Tremblay, and Alberto, played by Jack Dylan Grazer, who are both sea monsters living outside, living in the ocean outside of Italy. And, yeah, when they go on land, they turn into human looking, well, they look like humans, but whenever they get wet, that's what she said. yeah, whenever they get water on them, they show their true sea monster colors, I guess you could say. You also have Maya Rudolph in this film playing Daniela, which is Luca's mom, and Luca's dad played by Jim Gaffigan, and his name is Lorenzo. You have a small cameo from Sacha Baron Cohen playing Uncle Ugo. He was very funny. I thought that was hilarious, and I was very happy to see that he was in the voice cast. And then you also have Sandy Martin as grandma, Luca's grandma, Emma Berman as Julia, and Marco Baricelli as Massimo, which is Julia's father. And I'm trying to think if there's anything I'm forgetting here. I feel like there was one more character that I'm leaving out. Oh, yeah. Savario Raimondo as Ercole. Hopefully I'm saying that right. That guy's an asshole for sure. But this is directed by Enrico Casarosa, who has also done some work with Pixar in the past, like a lot of the writers and directors usually do. They usually have a past with, you know, animation and Pixar in general. Looks like he worked on Robots, Up, Incredibles 2, Coco, Ratatouille, and Toy Story 4. Let me see here. He also worked on Ice Age, and then the Pixar short called Piper. But yeah, definitely somebody who has experience with this field. The story is also by him and Simon Stevenson. Screenplay by Jesse Andrews and Mike Jones. Yeah, I really love the concept of this movie. It's visually stunning. Definitely like one of the most beautiful Pixar movies. I feel like each Pixar movie just keeps pushing the bar on beautiful visuals and just like beautiful animation in general. I love the scenery of this film, being in Italy, pretty much on the coast of Italy in a small town. I forget what the town is called, but yeah, just such a beautiful film about trying to accept yourself, trying to be something other than yourself, trying to, you know, fulfill a dream of yours. And yeah, overall, I don't know if this would be my favorite Pixar movie, but it's definitely up there for me, at least, because, yeah, even though the plot was simple, it still tugged on my heartstrings, but didn't tug on my heartstrings as much as other films do, like Coco and Inside Out. Those films definitely make me more emotional, as well as Up. But yeah, this one's a lot more lighthearted. Not as much, really, there to make you cry, but more towards the end, in the climax of the film, like, there were just some really sweet moments where I was just like, aww. But, yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say on the film, just because it is such a simple plot, and I don't want to get into the plot of it, because I really want people to go watch this for themselves, especially since they don't have to pay the $30 premium tier thing on Disney Plus. You can, if you have a subscription, you can just straight up watch it without having to pay extra. And I hope that really makes more people end up watching it. So yeah, I would probably give this movie 8.5 out of 10. I don't think it's a perfect movie. I think the story is a little bit simple. But at the same time, the, what's the word I'm looking for? The concept is what makes this movie really pop and shine. And, you know, it's not always great when a movie is strong just from the concept alone, but for this, it really does work. And the fact that it's a simple story really just makes it all the better for me. So yeah, there's my review for 2021's Luca, which is a Disney Pixar film. Again, it's on Disney Plus if you want to go watch it. No extra charge there. So yeah, if you have the subscription, you're able to watch it for free, which is very nice. So yeah, again, there's my review. In the Heights is a 2021 film based on the stage play by Lin-Manuel Miranda. I don't know if he completed it when he was 19, but I know he started it when he was 19. And I have to say, I loved this movie so much. It's directed by John M. Chu. The screenplay is by Quirara Alegria Hoods. It's Hudez. I don't know exactly how you'd pronounce it. But, yeah. I was blown away by this movie. Man, what can I say? I've already seen this movie 3 times. And I'm obsessed with the movie itself, and I love the characters and the actors that play them. I love the album. I've listened to that so many times. Overall, I would just say I really, this will probably end up being my favorite movie this year. Like, you know, there's a lot of movies coming out, but I think this one's going to take the cake. It'll be the number one spot, most likely. But you never know. There might be something that blows me away even more. But yeah, you have Anthony Ramos as Usnavi. You have Corey Hawkins as Benny. Leslie Grace as, why am I forgetting her name? Nina. Yeah, so those are kind of the three main characters there. You also have Melissa Barrera as Vanessa, Olga Merediz as Abuela Claudia, Jimmy Smits as Kevin Rosario, Gregory Diaz IV as Sonny. And I'd pretty much say that's the main cast. Some of the other supporting casts, you have Daphne Rubin Vega as Daniela, Stephanie Beatriz as Carla, Noah Catala as Graffiti Pete, Lin-Manuel Miranda as Piraguero. Pretty sure that's how you say his name. And then where's Kuka? You can't forget Kuka. By the way, the IMDb, if anybody from IMDb is listening to this shit, you guys need to fucking figure your shit out, because this is not put together very well. It gets better daily. Yesterday it was pretty bad, but today it's a little bit better. But yeah, that was just a sidebar there. And then you have Kuka, played by Dasha Polanco, who you might know from Orange is the New Black. And I believe she was on Russian Doll as well, which I really loved that first season. I have no idea if they're going to bring that show back or not, but I would really hope so. Yeah, really good show there. But again, really loved this movie. I'm addicted to the music of it. I'm probably going to watch it even more times now. Hopefully I don't overdo it and make myself see a lot of flaws in it. Because I know I've done that with movies before. Can't think of exactly what movies I've watched so many times where I start to see the flaws. Oh yeah, King of Staten Island. I watched that movie way too many times, and then I started to see so many flaws with that movie. And now I can't really watch it anymore. I mean, I still love it. There's a lot of elements of it that I love, like Bill Burr, Pete Davidson was really great in it, and a lot of the emotional elements. But there's a lot of that movie where I'm just like, oh, man, you didn't do too great with some of this. But yeah, overall, again, I would say I love this movie. It's an adaptation of the Broadway musical. You have Usnavi, who is a sympathetic New York bodega owner who saves every penny every day as he imagines and sings about a better life. Basically, you have all these Latino characters, and it's a film about equality. It's a film about, you know, having a dream, and yeah, about working hard for it, and how even if you have a dream, it seems like it's this big sparkly diamond, but it can really be difficult to achieve and cause a lot of hardships for you. But overall, the characters find ways to overcome that. And man, this movie made me cry. I can't lie. I'm a very emotional person when it comes to quite a bit of movies, especially when it comes to musicals. For those of you who don't know, I do really love musicals. One of my favorites is Mamma Mia. But now I'm pretty sure this one takes the cake for sure. I did love Hamilton, but I'm pretty much like 99.9% sure that I like In the Heights more than Hamilton now. Just because it's a more relatable story. It takes place like in modern days, pretty much. Like not the musical, or like the Broadway musical specifically, because it came out like I can't remember exactly when, but it's a little bit dated. But with this one, like, they have iPhones and stuff like that. So, you know, there's elements of it that are, you know, that make it more modern, I guess you could say, up to date. But, yeah, overall, amazing movie. I keep saying overall, but characters I liked, I definitely liked Usnavi. It's hard not to love him. He's great. I also love the salon ladies. I thought they were hilarious. Sunny was a great character too. And, Graffiti Pete was really a great character over time as well. I love Vanessa. I think she's great. Nina is a great character. Oh my God. There's just so many great musical, what do you call them? I guess not sequences, but musical numbers. There you go. That just stick with me. Like, let me look at the exact names of certain songs and I'll tell you which ones that are my favorite. Obviously, In the Heights is a great one. Breathe with Leslie Grace as Nina. That's a really great one, too. 96,000. That's a really great one. Piragua. Love that one as well. And Carnival de Barrio. I believe that's how you say it. That one was one of my favorites. And then Blackout. That song is beautiful. I loved it so much. So yeah, I definitely recommend you check this movie out. I'm going to show it to pretty much anybody that'll let me watch it with them. And I couldn't recommend it any more than I do now. I believe it'll be on HBO Max until July 11th. So if you want to watch it on there, definitely go ahead and do that. Or it's in theaters too. Yeah, I'm going to watch this movie a million times. I already know it. I hope I don't watch it too many times to the point where I hate it, but that'll be pretty difficult. So yeah, wasn't a super long review, but I kind of wanted to keep it light because I really just want people to go see this. I didn't want to spoil a whole lot, or give away much of the plot at all, because this is my favorite movie of the year so far. There have been a couple movies that really stood out to me, but this one takes the cake. I seriously recommend it. I give this a 10 out of 10 for sure. There's one musical number that I was kind of iffy on, but other than that, I loved every moment of this movie and highly recommend it. Seriously, watch it. If you have HBO Max, watch it on there. If you want to go in the theaters and watch it, I recommend that too. The theater going experience was really great for this movie. I went alone, but I felt like I was just connected with a lot of the people in the audience. It was a pretty packed theater. I did go to see it in IMAX, and, I was there with them laughing at it. I had watched it previously, before watching it in theaters, and there were just elements of it that, like, there were Hamilton fans in there, and certain things that they kind of understood, and certain actors they recognized, but yeah, seriously, go watch this movie. My favorite movie this year. And I'm pretty sure it's going to end up at number one when I do my top 10 of 2021. But there could be something else that stands out even more. I kind of doubt it at this point. But there's my review for 2021's In the Heights. All right, Loki episodes 1 and 2. Both available on Disney Plus right now. It's a Disney Plus original, I guess you could say, limited series. As far as I know, they're only going to do one season of this, but I could see them doing more, and I definitely wouldn't mind them doing more for sure. Because so far, I am enjoying the hell out of this show. Love the character of Loki. I'm not going to spoil a whole lot right off the bat. I'm actually going to give my general review of the first two episodes, and then I'll get into some spoiler talk. But yeah, obviously you have Tom Hiddleston coming back as Loki, and you have Owen Wilson coming in as the character of Mobius. You also have Gugu Mbatha-Raw as Ravona Renslayer. Sounds about right.
and Wonmi Mosaku as Hunter B-15. Right now, that's pretty much the main cast. I don't want to go too far into it or anything like that. You do have Tara Strong coming in as Miss Minutes, who you might recognize, played Bubbles in Powerpuff Girls, played Barbara Gordon in Batman the Killing Joke, has done a lot of voice work. She was the voice of Timmy Turner in Fairly Odd Parents, so that's definitely a big one there. And she plays Raven on Teen Titans Go. Looks like in Superhero Girls, she plays Batgirl and Harley Quinn. Don't know if that's all she plays, but yeah, she's, again, done so much voice work over the years, and definitely somebody I would say I'm a fan of. I don't follow her too much, but I follow her enough, I feel like, to consider myself at least somewhat of a fan. But yeah, without spoiling a whole lot, that's basically the main cast. Don't want to go too deep with it. Just so I don't spoil any surprises or anything like that. But yeah, the first episode is called Glorious Purpose. By the way, this whole series is directed by Kate Herron. Let me see if I recognize her from something. She directed Sex Education on Netflix. Looks like she directed Daybreak on Netflix as well. Something called 5x5. Not familiar with that. Yeah, other than that, nothing that most people would know, most likely. But yeah, I think she's doing a good job so far. At least I would say. The series is created by Michael Waldron, and the first episode is written by him. And, yeah, basically this episode is just kind of setting up what this season is going to look like. Introducing the TVA, which I won't get too heavily into in this non-spoiler review here. But, just having that and Loki's interaction with them and the whole concept of it, has to deal with, like, time travel, pretty much, and somewhat the multiverse. It's definitely kind of setting up some Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness kind of stuff. But yeah, again, it's so hard not to say anything that's somewhat spoilery for these first two episodes. So I guess my general review is I really enjoyed both of these episodes. I definitely think I enjoyed episode two a little bit more than the first, but I still enjoyed the first. Yeah, the first just kind of sets up what's to come, really. But, doesn't mean it's bad. But, yeah, now that I've given my non-spoiler review, basically, I'm going to get into spoilers. So, you have been warned. If you want to skip ahead to a certain point, I'm sure I'll be done talking about this in, like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, probably like 15 minutes from now. So if you want to skip ahead 15 minutes, go ahead. You've been warned. Let's get into spoilers. Yeah, so Mobius, I really like this character so far, played by Owen Wilson. I don't know, he just fits into the show very well. Obviously, I love Loki. I think he's great. Eugene Cordero as Casey is fucking hilarious. I just love his reactions to shit. But, yeah, Glorious Purpose just sets up basically what the TVA is. Kind of where Loki went after he took the Tesseract in Endgame. And, yeah, just sets all that shit up. Tells us about Nexus events and the sacred timeline and all that kind of stuff. Definitely hinting at what's to come in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and probably in Spider-Man No Way Home as well. Yeah, so I don't have a whole lot to say about that first episode, but it hinted at having a variant of Loki killing a bunch of these, you know, basically time cops, I would say. In the second episode, the variant is when we actually get to meet that character, played by Sophia DiMartino. Right now on IMDb, she's just called the Variant, but I kind of consider her at this point just Lady Loki. I knew it was coming. I didn't necessarily know it was coming just because of my own comic book knowledge and my intuition, but yeah, I mean, I kind of heard some stuff that she might show up and some theories and shit like that, so it didn't surprise me too much. The thing I like about it so far is that it doesn't save those kind of obvious reveals for the very end of the season, or like, you know, last episode of the season, like WandaVision did, and like Falcon and the Winter Soldier did. WandaVision with, you know, Agatha Harkness, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier with Sam getting the shield and the new Captain America suit. We all knew those things were coming, at least most of us. Probably Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we knew that was coming a little more than WandaVision. Agatha Harkness, I knew it was coming, though. Again, just based on, you know, rumors and theories and stuff like that. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier one was pretty obvious to me, at least. I didn't need any theories for that, for sure. But yeah, the idea of Lady Loki is something that I recently heard about before I started watching this series. So I kind of knew that was coming. And that's kind of the downfall for WandaVision in a way, because, like, at a certain point, if you look into it a little bit, you'll easily be able to find out that, you know, Agnes is Agatha Harkness, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that's pretty obvious that he gets the shield at the end. I think most people knew that, but the thing that holds it back is that it saved that, in WandaVision, it saved the reveal for the second to last episode, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier basically saved it for the last episode. We all knew it was coming. It was fun to, like, anticipate it and get excited about it, but at the same time, it did make it, since it's a week-to-week show, it made the surprise not as great, because, like, the amount of people that knew it was coming had to wait a whole week just to, you know, have their ideas, you know, confirmed. And by the way, Agatha Harkness was not revealed the second to last episode. She was revealed the third to last episode, I think. Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what episode they revealed that in, but I know there was a full episode of just Agatha messing with Wanda's brain, pretty much. Doing all that wiggly-woo shit. But, yeah, I'm happy that they revealed Lady Loki, like, right off the bat, pretty much. That just makes it all the better for me, because if they tried to shove that plot device in, you know, even, like, 3 episodes before the last, I think it would have hurt the show a little bit. So the fact that they're just going for it right off the bat makes it a little bit better for me. It makes me anticipate it a little bit more, just because I can theorize about where the series might go, rather than, oh, there's going to be this big reveal at the end of the show, pretty much, and I'm just waiting for that to happen, even though I already know what the reveal is. So for this, like, I knew the reveal, but they didn't wait the entire season to reveal it. They just pretty much did it in the second episode, which, you know, for some people it might be good, for some people it might be bad. For me, I enjoyed that because it lets us spend more time with that character overall in their actual form, like, because Agnes, we didn't really get her full character until maybe, like, oh, I forget how many episodes are in that season. I think 8, so we probably didn't get to know truly who she was until, like, episode 4 or 5, maybe, yeah, probably, like, episode 5, but yeah. Again, really been enjoying this show so far. I love the humor. I love the time travel aspect. I used to be a big fan of Doctor Who, so it definitely gives me some of those vibes. Of course, I love Loki. Tom Hiddleston is great. I'm a little bit worried that he won't be able to play that character anymore after this series, because I've really fallen in love with this character. Like, he has traits about him that are so mischievous, but at the same time, you can't help but love him for some of the things that he does. And that emotional moment he had in the first episode, just, like, going through his life, fucking love that. That was, like, I think I saw somewhere it was, like, years and years of character development in a few minutes. And it's just, like, oh,
I loved it. And you still get the aspect of Loki still being mischievous because he's the 2012 Avengers version, but after seeing his whole life, basically, like, it just maybe not matured him, but opened his mind a little bit more, especially after seeing all those Infinity Stones in the drawer, basically thinking, like, this, you know, everything I was fighting for was basically nothing in the end. And that'll humble a person. It'll make them rethink their entire life. But yeah, I don't know what else to say. I'm just really in love with this show so far, more so than I was with WandaVision and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Before this show came out, I would say Falcon and the Winter Soldier was my favorite, just because, I don't know how quite to explain why I liked it a little bit more. It was a little more based in reality, which I can give or take, really. Now that I've seen Loki, I'm like, I love the concept for this because it's just something really different. Like, we haven't gotten anything like this before, and it doesn't feel like the same thing, which Falcon and the Winter Soldier kind of had moments of. There were times where I was like, oh, the thing about Falcon and the Winter Soldier is I hated those Flag Smashers. They had literally no fucking character development, I feel like. I mean, Carly had some, but overall, like, their motive was just so fucking vague. So yeah, the villain really lacked there for me. Yeah, and I think just the final episode of WandaVision just really ruined it for me because it felt a little anticlimactic, to be honest. At least everything with Agatha. But the stuff with Vision and Wanda and the kids and all that shit had me fucking crying. But, yeah, just the climax battle of that show just didn't quite do it for me. Yeah, so overall, I'd say Loki is my favorite so far, but it does have time to still disappoint me. I hope it doesn't, but it could. But yeah, so far, loving it. Love Tom Hiddleston, obviously. I love, I can't say love yet because I haven't gotten enough time with her, but I do like Sophia DiMartino as Lady Loki. Yeah, just the look of her is really cool. Just a lot of crazy shit happened, and I didn't fully get what was going on at the end of episode 2, so hopefully it explains a little bit more, like, what's going on. I know that there's, like, a bunch of branch timelines now, and it's going crazy, but I don't know exactly what that was supposed to accomplish. I mean, I guess just, you know, an all-out war in the multiverse, but I feel like we were supposed to get that in Doctor Strange, and now that it's setting up now, I just don't know what we're going to have left by Doctor Strange, you know? But still, I'm fucking excited to keep watching this. Tara Strong as Miss Minutes is awesome. Yeah, she's really cool. But yeah, I'm trying to fill up a little more time for the people that skipped ahead. Trying to think of some more stuff to say about it. Oh, let me see. Yeah, I'm just really excited to keep watching. And the episodes are coming out on Wednesday, so I mean, you still gotta wait a week, but at the same time, it's earlier in the week, so that's kind of nice. I wonder if they're gonna do that with more Marvel shows or just like show releases in general. But yeah, I was excited to see that it was coming out on Wednesdays instead of Fridays because I didn't have to wait as long for the first episode to drop. But yeah, it's much different from a lot of the other stuff we've had, but at the same time, it's similar enough to make you feel that Marvel nostalgia slash just like excitedness for their content, because I feel like if you're a fan of superheroes or Marvel in general, then any project they're working on makes you excited to watch it. I'm not the most excited for Black Widow, but I'm still very excited to watch it because it's Marvel. What else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I wanted to say something about Black Widow real quick. I'm going to be on vacation when that comes out.
I'm heavily debating on going to the theater and watching that while I'm on vacation, but I might have to save it just because I wouldn't have enough content to talk about when that comes out, because I really won't be watching anything else. So I might have to save that for the week after. I get back home on Sunday, like July 11th, leaving on the 2nd. So I probably won't end up posting an episode, but yeah, I'll try to crank out that Black Widow review as soon as possible, once I'm back. Again, I probably, not probably, but there's a good chance I'm going to watch it while I'm on vacation, just because I don't want anything spoiled. I know it's a prequel, so like, I don't know, I just really don't want anything spoiled. I don't want the reveal of Taskmaster spoiled or anything like that, on who that would actually be. Because I have a feeling it's going to be like a big reveal, but maybe it won't be. I'm not sure. But yeah, there's my review for the first two episodes of Loki on Disney Plus. There's going to be 6 episodes in this season. I wish it would be longer, but I'll take what I can get. I love this character. I've honestly loved him since, oh, let's see, probably ever since his debut, to be honest. I mean, I didn't fully like him a whole lot in Thor, just because the first Thor wasn't the greatest. It was better than Thor the Dark World, but even in the Dark World, I liked Loki there. I probably really fell in love with the character in the first Avengers, even though he was kind of weak in a way. But I still liked him because, you know, Tom Hiddleston is great. I love his charisma. I love how he portrays the character. I love how the character's written. And I've just had so much time over the years to really love that character. And by Thor Ragnarok, I was just like, this is one of my favorite Marvel characters in general. Not my favorite Marvel villain, even though he probably is my favorite Marvel villain. But at this point, he's obviously more of an anti-hero. But for a while there, I would definitely consider him a villain. Up until pretty much Thor Ragnarok, because we got that post-credit scene of him pretending to be Odin. And I was like, oh, this guy's still an asshole. And maybe he still is, but he has enough good qualities to make him an anti-hero, I would say. So yeah, again, there's my reviews. My review for the first two episodes of Loki on Disney Plus. Episodes, again, were called, episode 1 was Glorious Purpose, and the second was called The Variant. By the way, I didn't say who wrote the second episode. It's Alyssa Karasik. Yeah, so just putting that out there, giving the credit where it's due. But yeah, if you haven't watched it yet, I highly recommend you go check it out. And I guess I just spoiled it for you. So if you haven't watched it yet, the fuck are you doing? But yeah, again, there you go. Let's move on to some other topics. And now I'm going to wrap this episode up. I was going to review 12 Mighty Orphans, but I didn't really care for it a whole lot and didn't have a whole lot to say on it. Really don't like sports movies a whole lot. But next week, I'm going to be ranking and reviewing the entire Conjuring universe, starting with The Nun and ending with The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. I'm going to be reviewing them in chronological order and then doing my ranking after I review them all. I'm also going to be reviewing and talking about the third episode of Loki on Disney Plus, as well as, oh yeah, F9. So that episode will probably come out on Friday. It would be sooner, but I want to be able to watch F9 and not have to do like its own separate episode just for that. So yeah, going to be talking about those things. Probably not anything other than that though. It's going to be kind of a light week for movies, but you know, the rank and review of the Conjuring universe will take up probably like over an hour, I'm guessing, because I've already recorded some of the reviews. I'm trying to review them after I watch them, just like record the reviews after I watch them, so they're fresh in my mind, and I don't get anything mixed up with any of the other films. But
definitely come back next Friday to hear my ranking and review reviews of the entire Conjuring universe, as well as my review / breakdown of episode 3 of Loki, and my review for F9, the Fast Saga. Yeah, the Fast Saga. Can't say I'm super excited to watch that movie, but yeah, it should be something. All the trailers really just make me roll my eyes and be like, ugh. I thought the last one was ridiculous, but it just keeps getting more ridiculous. So yeah, come back next Friday for all that. Thank you guys for listening. And yeah, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Pop Culture Podcast. Don't think I have anything else to say. So have a good rest of your weekend, and I'll see you next Friday.